Okay, welcome everybody.
This is Mordechai Plotzker, your host. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. This is a double parsha, so just wanted to give some closing thoughts. I'm sure everybody hopefully had a wonderful Shabbos. Parshas Chukas Balak is one of those, these parshios are not easy to understand. They're not parshios that we can learn pshat directly. We need a little bit of introspection, and we need a little bit of extra support from Chazal. So just wanted to focus on Chukas for a little bit of the time, and then with the remaining time that we have, I'll focus on Balak, even though Balak is so fascinating. Every pasuk in Balak is so rich, and there's so much to be said. So there are several topics in Chukas. We have the Paraduma. We have the concept of Tumas Meis. We have the death of Miriam, the main Meriva, the rock, and non-entry into Eretz Yisrael of Moshe Rabbeinu. And we close out with Aaron passing away also in the sixth parsha, in addition to Miriam. Keep on complaining to Moshe, the snakes, battle with Sichon and Og, and then, of course, leading into Balak himself, who, you know, as we leave, you know, Chukas, after the death of Sichon and Og, Balak doesn't really think of himself as too great. But he sees that, you know, this doesn't really allow him to fight Bnei Yisrael in a conventional way. So he decides to do something non-conventional, which is to use the power of speech. But we all have the concept and we know it so well because we say it every day. Eile barecha v'eile basusim, v'nachnu b'shem Hashem naskir. They have their horses and chariots, their armaments. But when it comes to Klal Yisrael, v'nachnu b'shem Hashem naskir, we call out in the name of Hashem. Succeed in all of our trials and tribulations that we've experienced throughout countless millennia. And this echoes the thought of Hakol Kol Yaakov Ha'idam Yidei Esav, same theme, that we have the power of speech, which is our tefillos, and they have the Yadayim. However, Chazal say that when our kolos are so strong and united and firm, then Ein Ha'idam Yidei Esav, then the Yadayim of do not have any power. And so in order to understand Balak, we really need to go back into Chukas. And I wanted to just focus on the main Meriva, because that really is a time period for the Jewish people that it was preceded by the death of Miriam, Aaron's older sister, so is Moshe's older sister. And in the Haftorah, we find that Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam are all mentioned by the prophet Micha, which is a very eloquent and touching, you know, point in the sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminds us about how he protected us during the time of Balak and Bilam, both of whom, ironically, are ancestors to the Jewish people. Balak is the patriarch, the grandfather of Rus. That's the Gemara Nazar Chalkimo brings down, that he was because he had a son named Eglon. Eglon stood up for the words of Hashem, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Eglon that he was going to be rewarded for doing this. Imagine someone standing up, and that's the reason why we take 3 steps back and 3 steps forward in order to recognize that together with other explanations. But this is one of the reasons, because he's able to hear the words of Hashem. And Balak, because of the way that he brought these karbanos in the sixth parsha, with so much tzedakas and slavas, he was, in a way, mekabel ol malchus shamayim, through the sincerity of his action. And so for someone who's trying to do something so sincere, then the Gemara says, "Zchus Balak arasha shehevi membeis karbanos zachsav yatzimena rus." And in the merit of Balak bringing 42 karbanos, he merited to have a granddaughter named Rus. And the amazing part about this is that you would never imagine that somebody who wanted to harm the Jewish people would be gifted with such a priceless gift. And that we see even in the second pasuk of this week's parsha in Balak, where it says, "Kiravu," that there are so much, that there are so many of them. That Moab was disgusted to be around Bnei Yisrael, because when you look at the topography of the map, and you see how well Klal Yisrael behaves, and then you see how well the others behave, especially Moabim, the Moabites, and then you get to appreciate why they were able to be makariv them. So Vayaga Moab and Vayakats, the Kedusha Slavery brings down, is because of our mitzvahs and masim told them that we were performing among one another. At that particular period in time, there were many people that came over to the Jewish people, because of the ruchnius that they sensed within us, the spirituality that they desired, and then they came over. The greatest gift we ended up receiving, obviously, was that Kriyas Yamsuf and that was Rus. The neshama of Rus was freed. Now find her way to the Jewish people. That happened, of course, as we described in Megillas Rus, that there was also a famine, and that famine took two forms. One was spiritual, because the people did not trust in their leaders, that they were shvora shoftim, they were judging the judges. And the second, vayira ba'aretz, that there was a second level of famine in the form of a decline in food. And so Elimelech, as Ben Ishchai explains, was justified in leaving Eretz Yisrael at that time, because he understood that the only way for us to keep the land of Israel is if we keep the Torah and mitzvos. And if we fail to do so, then we're no longer going to be able to keep Eretz Yisrael. Since he sensed that this was not happening, he got up and left. Now, by his departure, some say that he was right, some say that he was wrong. He certainly, you know, sent a shockwave through the Jewish people. And this clearly was a very firm demonstration about how he believed. And it was only through this famine that David Melech comes into the world, because as he left, Machlon and Kilion, they marry, but they don't have, you know, they end up passing away. And then Boaz, of course, takes over the Nacha. So that's what the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Arov Avdecha Latov Ayashpuni Zedim, and Tov Torah Sticha Me'al Fezal HaVekesef, that Arov Avdecha Latov Ayashpuni Zedim means that he should be a guarantor for me, and that there should be no naysayers that have any footing. So the Ben Ishchai takes the word Arov and turns it into Ra'av, and says that the Ra'av Avdecha Latov, that the famine actually turned out for good. Ayashpuni Zedim, now no one can deny the fact that I'm here in this world, says David HaMelech, and it's all because of my great ancestor patriarch, Elimelech. So again, I'm moving different pieces and parts, but there's the concept over here that I'm trying to draw back to is actually something rooted in Parshas Balak. And I wanted to just go through the Mei Meriva for a moment, because it was in between the death of Miriam that preceded the Mei Meriva, and it followed the death of Aaron. So Moshe Rabbeinu clearly was in an unsteady form of mind. But despite the fact that he may have been very saddened by the loss of his sister who looked after him when he was a little boy in that Atzei Gomer, in that, you know, that little teva that was built for him, that little basket that he was placed inside, which Paro's daughter Batya found him, we understand that Moshe still had a responsibility to uphold the tenets that he was instructed to deliver to the Jewish people. So Rashi explains the reason why he was punished was because he hit the rock. He wasn't supposed to hit the rock. He was supposed to speak to the rock. Why he was told to take a staff and speak to the rock is yet another anomaly, which we'll get to in just a moment. The Rambam says that when he said, Shimono Hamorim, listen to me, you rebels, that demonstrated that Moshe Rabbeinu was unfit to lead because he was unable to relate to people. And when you speak down to people, and when you don't respect the people in the proper way, then that's a demonstration that leadership has slipped by. Number three is Rabbeinu Hanano, that says, the reason why was, Amin Hasela Hazeh, Noti Lachem Mayim, says the Pasuk. The Moshe should have said, Amin Hasela Hazeh, Noti Hashem Lachem Mayim. And by this little nuance, it made it seem as though he himself, Moshe, was delivering the water, and that the miracle was not coming from Hashem directly, when it truly was, because no one can draw water from a stone. So this clearly should have been referenced back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fourth is the Chidushi Arim that explains Le'enehem. The word Le'enehem, the Chidushi Arim explains that the miracle was supposed to occur in front of their eyes. And the fact that it did not occur, Moshe Rabbeinu had done this in a more private manner and then revealed it to everybody. That was Le'enehem. The fifth is the Chidushi Slevi, where he fuses the Rambam, who says Shimon Amorim, together with Rashi by hitting the rock, and he says that negative reinforcement in a form of speech leads to a negative result, which is hitting the rock. And the opposite is equally true. If we speak positive, we think positive, as we say in Yiddish, good, zobet zayin good. If someone works hard at something, then it will be good. So the message there, says the Kedusha Levi, is that we have to learn from this example on how we can improve our communication skills to be both positive in our frame of mind and positive in delivery of the word. And they usually coexist together. If one has the former, then they certainly have the latter. The sixth explanation is the Noam Elimelech, where he says that Moshe hit the rock twice, thereby decreasing the emunah among the people, as one time should have been sufficient. So that means that Moshe was lacking patience, and by hitting it a second time, he forced the miracle to happen, as opposed to allowing the miracle to happen on its own by hitting it simply once. The seventh explanation, I think we're up to, is Rabbeinu Bachya, that expresses a similar thought to that of the Noam Elimelech. Then we have Rabbi Shimon Schwab, who explains in a Sefer Mayim Beis HaShoeva that Moshe took Aaron's matzah, his staff, which had spouted forth almonds, and we explain why specifically almonds, because like almonds are very bitter in the beginning and sweet at the end, so too is creating shalom. Shalom is very difficult in the beginning to get people to speak to each other, but it's very sweet in the end, as opposed to the opposite, which is Lashon Hara, Lashon Shemra, Rechilas is very sweet in the beginning because everybody wants to know what this one said, what that one said. But at the end, it's very negative. It's very bad because then people have ill will toward one another. So this also could be dovetailing into the Moshe's approach, which was not from the positive frame, but rather from the negative. The next explanation is from Rabbi Saul Friedman, the Chartik of Rav, who explained that the miracle was only supposed to happen for the Zakenim. However, the heir of Rav showed up, and they taunted Moshe, saying that it's not a really big deal for Moshe Rabbeinu, who went up to Shemayim for 40 days and 40 nights, to have water come forth from a rock. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, instead of speaking to the rock, which is what he was supposed to do, he did something different in order to impress those that didn't need to be impressed. And that was clearly unimpressive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then, of course, we have Rav Norman Lamb, the Rosh Yeshiva from YU, the president of YU, who explains that once you hit something, Moshe Rabbeinu, we know, was the midah of tefillah, and everything that Moshe Rabbeinu did to protect the Jewish people was through his speech. However, when a person moves away from speech and only focuses on the physical element, then he's no longer in the realm of this generation that he's supposed to be leading, which is the Dar HaMidbar, which is, as the Kedushas Levi says, Dar HaMidaber, the generation that speaks. Moshe Rabbeinu used his power of speech to protect, as opposed to, or in contrast to, the Dar Asiya, which is the generation of action that would take place under Yehoshua, who is going to be Kovesh Eretz Yisrael. So once Moshe Rabbeinu exhibits elements of Dar HaAsiya, which is physical action in hitting the rock, that proved that he was no longer fit to be the leader. And that concludes that particular, wow, I just realized it's 6. So I'm going to close out with that. But I just wanted to close out with one additional thought from Parashas Balak, where we know, we say, Matov Alach Yaakov Nishkon Asach Yisrael. Chavrusa, Rabbi Van Bethenhoff, likes the question, why is that the opening sentence that we say every morning before we start our tefillos? And the answer is that when Moshe Rabbeinu constructed the homes, none of them opened up into the homes of another, and that prevented any of us from becoming jealous of our neighbors. And if we don't have jealousy, we don't have any degree of hatred, and we don't have any ideas of theft, whether it's open or concealed, and we also don't have thoughts of murder. But if we do have jealousy, then it could lead to hatred, which could lead to theft, which could lead to a state of murder. So therefore, if the Jewish people are unable or simply not interested in saying something negative about one another, then how can Bilam say something negative about the Jewish people? And if we take this one step further, and we can say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I am not looking so closely into my neighbor's actions, because if I did, I would find something that might make me feel uncomfortable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please don't look so closely into my actions, because if you were to look too closely, then much like a neighbor next door, then you might find something that makes you feel uncomfortable. So therefore, let's have a clean slate. I don't look into others. I don't have anything negative to say about other people. So please don't look so closely into mine, and let's not have anything to be said negatively in my particular space. in my particular endeavors. And once we do that, then we clear the slate, and then we're able to say, Baruch Aleinu Atah Hashem Azos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless this year with success. Refa'enu Hashem B'nei Rafei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should provide a full healing to all those that are unwell and that are sick and need of Refuah Shelema. And all the other brachas that we say in Shemoneh Esrei, that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive us for our shortcomings, Slachlanu Avinu Kichatanu, and then, of course, getting to our tail end where we say Modem, we say thank you. So all these things now come in a full circle that we're able to present ourselves from a clean slate and really have a meaningful connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with that, I wish everyone a wonderful July 4th weekend, and I wish everyone a beautiful week. I also wanted to take note that this marks July 13th will mark 10 years since we started Share Enjoyment, and the first year was given on Parashas Chukas Balak. I think it was actually Balak, but at the time there were four people on the call: myself, Aryeh's mom, and Yibar Lechan, Baruch, and my mom. So the four of us started Share Enjoyment, and we're glad to be able to still be giving a share 10 years later. And I'm so appreciative to all the Magide Share that makes, and of course all of you listeners that make Share Enjoyment so wonderful and so appreciated. So thank you so much again, and have a wonderful Shavua Tov.